Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is under the weather. As always, this show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Use promo code 5, F-I-V-E. And if you're on there as of late, they got a lot of free squares. So you're getting a lot of free plays, actually, okay, toward a parlay. For example, they have one for this weekend. If Joe Burrow manages to throw for 1 yard, you win half your bet. Is that a good deal? I would hope so. Is that a good deal, Simon?
Sounds like a good deal.
Is that a good bet for Joe Burrow to throw for 1 yard?
I think you're safe.
Okay. So if you could do that, you deposit $100, you'll get $100 because if you use a promo code, of course, which is F-I-V-E, you get $100. You could put it all down on that free square that they're giving you with Joe Burrow plus something else, and they're paying you as a parlay. So go and do it. And, of course, Better Edge. Go to betteredge.com/5reasons, and you get $25 just for signing up. And, of course, we'd like to welcome back. They were gone for a week, so it's not like we were welcome. You know, it wasn't like they're gone for months or anything like that. But Manscaped, use promo code 5RSN, get 20% off your entire order. Simon, do you know what Manscaped does?
Shave balls.
They do that. Yeah. But is that all they do? Is that the only thing that they do?
I don't know.
Okay. It's not. And okay. Beginning in February, they will launch their beard care kit. Do you currently have a beard?
I do.
Okay. They're going to launch all kinds of things. We'll have more information on that in February. They're going to launch their entire facial hair care kit line. Try saying that really, really fast, like 4 or 5 times. We'll have more information on that in February. We will give you promo codes for all of those things. And, of course, you can still use the promo code right now. It's 5RSN, 20% off your entire order, and free shipping. They threw that in like a few months ago. So take care of that. All right. Interesting weekend of football. And the Dolphins kind of have, like, you know, they're kind of involved in every single one of these games because there's a question that comes back to Miami in every one of them. And I guess we'll start out west. I thought that was a great game. And I hate that Dak Prescott is getting all kinds of shit this week. He did throw 2 interceptions. He did miss wide open people. But the 49ers defense kind of makes you do things like that. Like, they're good. They're really good. Well, first of all, I got to ask you. Like, you saw the game. Like, what did you think of that game? Cowboys 49ers.
I thought that the Cowboys are incredibly badly coached. Mm. I thought there was error after error, especially in the second half. I thought losing Tony Pollard obviously hurts. I didn't think Dak Prescott played very well. And that last play was an absolute abomination, but they just wasted so much time. I mean, the 49ers played well. And I think for as poorly as Brock Purdy played in the first half, he was absolutely sensational on that long 8-minute drive that really killed the game to drive to what was essentially the game-winning touchdown, converting 3 or 4 third downs. Mm. I thought the 49ers defense sort of dominated, but it was hard to see past how badly organized the Cowboys were, how badly they played overall, and the fact that, look, offensively, Michael Gallup had no catches, Noah Brown had two catches. Everything was just going to CeeDee Lamb. Significant help at the skill positions. And part of me does wonder whether or not Mike McCarthy survives, especially if Sean Payton starts to, you know, float around a little bit, maybe not going to Houston, maybe not going to Carolina. You know, I can't see Jerry Jones just sitting there and accepting, what, a 30th year of not making an NFC Championship game. So, you know, kudos to the 49ers. It'll be a great game this weekend, but, you know, Dallas have only got themselves to blame.
And that's 2 years in a row that the 49ers take the Cowboys out. I thought Dak was bad. And I like him a lot as a quarterback. I had a post earlier today on my own Twitter account where, you know, it's really only a handful of teams that you could say, look, we're absolutely awful at the quarterback position. You know, it's a handful of teams. It's less than a dozen teams that are absolutely, you know, abjectly awful at the quarterback position. I don't think the Cowboys are one of them. But, man, he played bad in that game. He missed. There's a play where Dan Orlovsky is breaking down the throw where Fred Warner is in that classic Tampa 2 drop from the middle linebacker position. And that's all well and good that he manages to cover CeeDee Lamb on the seam. And Dak Prescott throws it that way, and it gets broken up. But had Dak Prescott just looked off that play, they left T.Y. Hilton completely uncovered. It would have been a walk-in touchdown. So
I mean, he was lucky to get away with the interception that almost was from that he almost threw to Dre Greenlaw as well. So yeah.
It was, now he was bad. He was bad. And here's the question: Tony Pollard broke his leg. His rehab period is 3 months, which, you know, most people like to say that they're not a math major. I actually was a math major. I'm a math major. That takes him through free agency, so he won't be healthy to even work out for a team if he had to work out for a team. Does this not make him an attractive free agent target? Because there's no way he's going out there in a wheelchair asking for $55 million, is he?
I mean, an attractive free agent target for whom? I mean, I can't
see. For Miami? Maybe to sneak him in here at a lower cost?
I can't see the Dolphins getting involved in a player that I don't think Dallas will allow to leave anyway. You know, he's been the most important player on their offense for most of the season. I'd be absolutely stunned, especially given the obvious downhill trajectory of Ezekiel. If he's allowed to leave, he'll be ready for camp. I can't see that the Dallas will let him go. I think they'll see him right. So for me, I don't think he'll be a player that the Dolphins will be involved with, because I don't think he hits free agency in the first place.
So you think Dallas will take advantage of his injury to get him at a lower cost?
Probably.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I didn't have many questions in the Giants-Eagles game. That was an abomination. Like, the Giants didn't belong on that field. I guess there's one question. Saquon Barkley is actually a betting favorite to end up a Miami Dolphin in Las Vegas. I don't know why. Maybe they're thinking that the Dolphins are going to emulate the 49ers and do the Christian McCaffrey thing. But I know, and I tend to agree with you, I don't think Miami's going to go out there and spend $12 to $14 million a year to $15 million a year for a Saquon Barkley. But if they did, let's just say that they did, hypothetically, wouldn't he actually be a great fit? And doesn't that make your offense much more dangerous and much more than the one dimension that they had this year, which was just throwing to those two guys, Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill?
Sure. I mean, great players make anybody better, but I just can't see, you know, I just don't see the value in spending big money on second contract running backs. It's just not worth it. And it's never been something that's been part of an MO that Mike McDaniel has ever been involved with. You go right back to looking at, you know, the guys at Denver. You go back to looking at Arian Foster, most recently Elijah Mitchell with the 49ers. I just don't see it as part of their plan. It's not really something that I think they would do. He's a really good player. But the money that he's going to want, that to me just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's interesting that he said after the game that he's realistic, that he understands his own injury history. And then immediately it came out that he wants somewhere around 12 to 15 and about 35 guaranteed. And I'm like, yeah, you're realistic, Saquon. He's a fabulous player. Fabulous player. Yeah, you know, great if you had to choose one, by the way, Saquon or Pollard.
Probably Barkley.
Yeah, he's
better in pass protection, so probably Barkley.
Yeah, moving on to the Jaguars and Chiefs. I don't have many questions on the Dolphins that concern the Dolphins, but I guess we could touch this game very very briefly. Jaguars are going to be one of the better teams in the AFC next year, aren't they? They're good.
Yeah, they're a good team. They've got and they've got a great quarterback. So, and you're adding Calvin Ridley to the mix next season in terms of wide receiver talent. Really good front seven. They've got a great young corner in Tyson Campbell. Offensive line looks, Walker Little looks fantastic at left tackle. So, I think they're a good team with an excellent coach. Doug Peterson's a Super Bowl winning coach. He didn't become a bad coach overnight in Philadelphia. And he's clearly got that offense humming. Travis Etienne will be better next year, even though he's excellent this year. And I think they retain Evan Ingram, who's had almost 800 yards. But no, they're a good team, and they're only going to get better.
Yeah, everybody was making fun of their quote unquote B talent overhaul in free agency with Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram. Those guys have been great for them all year. And Travis Etienne, yeah, I completely agree that they have an identity. Like, they know what they are and they know what they want to be. And that game was closer than that 27-20 score. That fumble by Askew at the 4-yard line, that was huge.
Yeah, massive.
That changed the entire game. Chiefs not as scary with Mahomes with a high ankle sprain, because we're going to get into the Bengals and Bills now.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you have a quarterback that can make so many fantastic plays off platform, out of structure, then it's obviously going to hurt him. They've kept a lid on how he is. I suspect yesterday he was probably on crutches, but we'll have to see how he transpires at the weekend. I think what will be very interesting is that the Bengals will be able to get middle pressure through BJ Hill and through DJ Reader, and also through the linebackers Pratt and Wilson. I would expect Lou Anarumo to do what he did at the weekend, which is, Anarumo, just yet another fantastic game plan.
Absolutely.
But, what he will do, and you saw it at the weekend, all these creeper blitzes that he does, this and consistently pulls it off. It's late shifts of coverage. It's post-snap shifts of coverage, which are hard to do, but he's managed to do them. It's simulated pressure from two high safety looks. It's inverted blitzes and rolling to single high. The inverted blitz coming from Mike Hilton, who's a great blitzer. It's two high zone, back to single high, back to two high at the snap, which just confuses quarterbacks. I mean, so much smoke and mirrors, but for two seasons long, he's been phenomenal. And I'd expect more of that, especially with a quarterback who can't maneuver his way out of the pocket in the way that he's been so deadly at doing.
Yeah, I watched that game and I was, I wouldn't say I was shocked, because I know the Bengals are really, really good, but I was shocked at how effective that defensive game plan was all throughout the game. Like, the Bills didn't have a counter, and that moves us to this game. By the way, do you know that the Bengals are now favored in Arrowhead? Like, when the hell have you ever heard something like that?
I think they'll win the Super Bowl. I think the Bengals are the best team in the NFL currently. I think they've got the hottest quarterback. They've been the hottest team over the last few weeks. The offense is fantastic. Defensively, they're a really good team. They can get pressure with four. They can get pressure up the middle. They can get pressure on the edge. When you look at Hendrickson and Joseph Asai and Sam Hubbard, the linebackers are excellent. They can go forward, sidelines, backwards. They've got two really good safeties, Von Bell, Jesse Bates. I know they're missing their best cornerback in Chidobe Awuzie, but Eli Apple is battle-tested, and he's played better over the last year than he has done at any point in his career. Cam Taylor-Britt is beginning to really show up, second-round pick. They've got excellent special teams, great kicker. And I've got to give Zach Taylor a little love, because, a year ago, I thought he was a bit of a clown figure. You don't clown your way to the Super Bowl, obviously, but what he's done, and I think it's very key for Mike McDaniel, actually, is that what Zach Taylor has done clearly is audited the stuff that he was really bad at, which was in-game decisions at times. It was time management. It was timeouts. It was personnel groupings. He's become a much better all-around coach, I think. And his offensive game plan on Sunday against the Bills was phenomenal. And they carried it out to an absolute T with a quarterback who's as good as there is in the league. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says, Joe Burrow is a top three quarterback in the NFL at worst. He just has whatever it is, he has it. And he was phenomenal on Sunday in bad conditions, but he's just next level.
Yeah. And I can't agree anymore. It's Joe Burrow. The thing about Joe Burrow, and this is really interesting because I heard Tom Brady has an excellent podcast, by the way. I finally got to listen to it with Jim Gray. Have you listened to the Let's Go podcast with Tom Brady?
I heard bits of it, but I haven't heard a lot of it.
Well, Tom Brady kind of explained, although he wasn't talking about Joe Burrow directly, he actually mentioned Tua a little bit. He said that the part of being the franchise guy is getting your players to love you and love you as a friend, and then have you more as their leader, but also a guy that they can go to and talk to, and you'll say something to them that will make them believe no matter what. And he says that some of the, and then he says, of course, the second part of that is you got to play good, you know? So that's important. Joe Burrow is that guy. Like he exudes confidence. Like, you know, you look at him and you're like, you know, you don't worry about that guy. Like you look at him and you're like, okay, I know we have this. But moving off the Bengals, although, you know what, let's not move off the Bengals. They started three different offensive linemen. That offensive line dominated. How yeah. is that happening? Because for 2 years here, we take one injury on the offensive line and it's calamitous. Like, how are they doing it? Because they completely dominated with guys that didn't hurt. I never heard of before playing tackle and guard.
I mean, Jackson Carman, who played at Clemson, came in. I think he had 39 pass snaps. He didn't allow a single sack or even a single hit. And only one pressure in 39.
Yeah, Burrow took two quarterback hits and one pressure. Like, how did that happen?
Crazy. Crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. Like, you know, I guess you got to throw it up to, I guess, good advanced scouting that they found some of these guys. Although, you know, to be fair, Joe Burrow is the most sacked quarterback in football. But some of that is that he holds the ball to try to make plays.
Well, Jackson Carman was better in that game than Jonah Williams was at left tackle all season long. I think it's interesting. And look, the bottom line is, I think, you know, yes, if my aunt had balls, she would be my uncle. But the Bengals were at midfield in the Super Bowl last year. And if the offensive line had managed to hold up, they win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that's up for too much debate, because they were driving against a tired defense. And then Aaron Donald took over, Von Miller took over on that first to fourth down set of plays. But they are a very good team, and they are coached well on both sides of the ball. Ryan Callahan, the offensive coordinator, Taylor, obviously, and Lou Anarumo, done a phenomenal job. And also, they're not going away. Do you know what I mean? They're not going anywhere. And it was a bit scary that I think Joe Mixon had averaged 3.8 yards per carry throughout the season. And ended up at one point, I mean, I don't know what his final numbers were, but certainly midway through the second quarter, he was averaging 9 yards per carry against a really good Bills defense. So,
yeah, and there was times where Bengals fans on Twitter were wondering if Joe Mixon can see, because they were making fun of his vision, because he tends to run into the backs of offensive linemen.
Mm.
And he had a rough one against Miami, but Miami, you know, was proven – toward the end of the year that, yeah, they were very, very good against conventional runs. But, yeah, Joe Mixon absolutely has picked it up. Moving off the Bengals, the Bills, my God. Like, if you follow their beat, and I've been, you know, reading everything that they're writing, like, it's calamitous over there. Like, they're losing Tremaine Edmonds, and they're losing Jordan Poyer, and they want to trade Gabe Davis because they hate Gabe Davis now. Like, it's a mess over there. And at least as of now, they win a lot. But it kind of it's not as daunting as it was before, right? Like, you go into next season, you know, provided that the Dolphins have a decent offseason, they fill some holes, expecting to try to win the division title next year, right? Like, that's the goal now.
Of course, it has to be.
Yeah, because the Bills have completely come back down to earth and are on the way down on that mountain. Any chance that they try to scrounge up any pennies to try to poach one of these Bills players, Tremaine Edmonds and Jordan Poyer. It's kind of funny that those two guys are at two positions of, I wouldn't say need, but a position of luxury that could actually push that defense over the edge.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's interesting. Tremaine Edmonds scares me in a way. He scares me because he'll be expensive because of his draft standing and because of the season that he's had. But I never generally trust players who play well only in their contract year, which is what he's done. He has been inconsistent. He has been inconsistent reading his keys. He's been inconsistent getting off blocks. He's been inconsistent in coverage. And 18 months ago, he looked, you know, he was veering towards not bust territory because I don't think he'd had long enough, but it was really beginning to worry. I also am fearful of the fact that he plays alongside Matt Milano, who is an elite defender, an elite linebacker. Poyer is a really good player, but I suppose I think when it comes to Poyer, the question mark for me is what scheme are we running? You know, because we play a lot of single high. Are we now going to go to two shell? Are we going to go to, you know, coverage where we play two high safeties where he could play alongside of Javon Holland? But then the question is, what happens to Brandon Jones, who's coming back from the injury but brings his own special skill set, you know, a lot of which is in and around the box, alley running, blitzing. I think he's the best blitzing, or one of the best blitzing defensive backs in the NFL, along with Mike Hilton and a couple of other guys. So that's a big question for me, really, in terms of those two players. Poyer seems to indicate that he won't be back. I suspect they'll try and keep Edmonds around, but to me, that's a worry. There are better linebackers out there, I think, that better fit what Miami want. TJ Edwards, Philadelphia, David Long in Tennessee. There's a couple other guys I really like as well in free agency. So yeah, I would be, to me, buyer beware for Tremaine Edmonds, I've got to say.
Yeah, as far as the Jordan Poyer, I kind of like him, and I'll tell you why. I think he's going to be cheap, and not only is he going to be cheap, well, relatively cheap, it's that I think you get more bang for your buck on a 10 mil a year average. Okay, where are you going to get a better player for 10 million a year than Jordan Poyer? And I understand he's 30, and that's the reason why he's going to be cheap, because I think he'll get that Tyrann Mathieu contract that Tyrann Mathieu last year got 3 for 28, half of it guaranteed, 14 million guaranteed. So if you think about that, that's 7 million guaranteed per year for age 31 and 32. Jordan Poyer is the same thing. It'll be age 31 and 32.
Yeah.
That's like, where are you going to get a better player? You agree with that, right? Like, that's value. Where are you going to get a better player for 10 million a year?
Struggle.
Yeah. It's so. Yeah, like that's one I would watch really closely. But you're gonna need a defensive coordinator first to see if he's actually gonna be necessary or not.
Yeah, exactly. I think you've got to work out whether or not, you know, if you're playing that Fangio, Sean Desai kind of defense, then that's you know, he's the perfect kind of counter to that. But I think if you're playing a different scheme, then perhaps not. I mean, to me, the best player to play that position, to play alongside Javon Holland, would be Chauncey Gardner-Johnson of Philadelphia. But I can't think for a second that a GM as smart as Howie Roseman is going to let him go.
And also Garner Johnson, like you're talking, now you're getting into 16, 17 million.
You're talking $80, $85 million for his contract. So
yeah, that's a different kind of player altogether. You know, I'm trying to get an impact player on the team.
It's a different kind of financial player altogether. So
yes, yes. And he's better. Let's be fair about it. He's better than Jordan Poyer. All right, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about those defensive coordinator candidates. There's only three of them as of right now. So they're cooking something up, and it's pretty quiet over in Miami Gardens. But we're going to go to break first. And when we come back, we'll talk about it. But first, these words. Do you have a water leak and can't find where it's coming from? Are you dealing with water or mold damage in your home or business? Then call Water Cleanup of Florida at 954-579-0356. For immediate assistance. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, and their team is prepared to handle all types of leak detection issues, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. After the leak has been located and repaired, Water Cleanup of Florida will then clean, dry, and fully restore the damaged areas. Water Cleanup of Florida is fully licensed, insured, and certified to provide the one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. There is no need to bring in other contractors. They will handle the entire project from start to finish. Service areas include Miami, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356, or visit their website at WCUFL.com. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, and we're back. All right. They've only been tied to three guys. They've requested one interview, and they've done another interview. The interview with Anthony Campanile, the linebacker coach, I didn't, you know, I kind of saw it coming. I reported it on OnlyFans. He's highly regarded, you know, very energetic guy. Guy commands respect, well-liked in the organization. Well, he's beloved by his players, especially Jerome Baker. Jerome Baker called him the best coach he's ever had. So Anthony Campanile, you know, I don't think he's going to get the job, but it's a good look. See, you know, it's a good look for the organization to give him a little leg up. Your thoughts on the in-house interview being Anthony Campanile?
Yeah. I mean, I think you said it already. We weren't sure whether it was going to be him or Austin Clark, and it turns out it's him. Interesting guy. I mean, he coached offense for many years and only really has been hardcore defensive coach for 4 or 5 years. But I do think it's to pump his stock up around the league. And I suspect whoever comes in, they'll probably look to keep him on. But you do have these situations where a guy gets an interview under the proviso that you almost know. To me, I think the Dolphins know who they're signing, who they're bringing in as defensive coordinator. Mm. And I think potentially they've already sounded out said person, and they are probably going to bring their own coaches with them, and Campanile is not one of them. And it feels a bit like Campanile is being pumped up so that he just can walk into the Senior Bowl or walk into the combine and get a job, because, you know, he had an interview for a defensive coordinator job with the playoff team. Who's not going to want to hire him? So it does feel a little bit like that. But I do think the Dolphins have got the guy that they want. They know who they want, and this is a sort of a pat on the back for some hard work.
Yeah, and he strikes me as the ambitious type, like the guy that he's not thinking about the Cardinals defensive coordinator job or the Miami Dolphins defensive coordinator job. He's thinking about the head job in about 5 years somewhere. So he's a guy that I don't, you know, I wouldn't surprise me the least bit if he takes a college DC job and then tries to move up the chain that way and tries to end up as the head coach somewhere in the NFL down the road. He's the ambitious type. And I think he's a fabulous coach. You know, they already lost one in Steve Gregory because he was tied kind of to Josh Boyer. Anthony Campanile is a guy worth keeping if the new DC wants to keep it that way. But, you know, otherwise, you know, giving him a leg up is probably a good thing. They interviewed Sean Desai for the DC job. He's the Seattle Seahawks defensive coordinator. Kind of a disciple of Vic Fangio. Your thoughts on him as a possible DC?
Yeah, I mean, he is somebody that I think he's the guy that the Dolphins want. He strikes me as a defensive Mike McDaniel in many ways, except that maybe experience-wise, he has a little bit more maybe. I mean, this is a guy who's been, you know, director of operations at the, you know, for the U for Miami. Mm-hmm. He's been a college professor. I think he was at Boston University as a college professor at Columbia. He's a Columbia guy, Ivy League guy. Obviously, McDaniel's a Yale guy.
Yeah, right. I picked that up too, right? Like, you know, they could be kindred spirits. Like when they get into a room, like I don't even know if do we even know when this thing is scheduled?
I'm not sure. But you know, this is a guy that is essentially sort of, you know, Vic Fangio's right hand man, was his right hand man in Chicago for 4 years, and we obviously talk about Fangio as being the guy that we want, but this is, you know, this is the young Fangio in many respects. You know, worked his way up the ranks in Chicago, three different head coaches, which obviously speaks really well of him. You know, Mark Trestman, John Fox, Matt Nagy, and I think that, you know, this is a guy that's worked and been under the umbrella, as it were, of guys like Vic Fangio, of Pete Carroll, of Chuck Pagano, of Vic Fangio, obviously, you know, Robert Saleh, heavily influenced by Pete Carroll. McDaniel loves Saleh. You know, Saleh got the sack from the Jets. You know, Mike McDaniel drive him from New Jersey down to Miami to be the defensive coordinator. So I think, you know, Desai would be a very interesting coach, schematically very similar to what Vic Fangio runs, which is, you know, light boxes. It's two high safeties, and it's aggressive on the defensive line. And you know, I think he would be the name that, you know, it just feels to me as though he's the hot name that the Dolphins are very interested in. And, you know, each team has to, if you hire a new coordinator, you have to hire a minority candidate. Desai is American Indian, or Indian American even. And I think he would be, you know, I think the Bears were the sixth best defense in the NFL in 2021 when he's Bears defensive coordinator. They're third against the pass. I think he's a very interesting candidate. He's going to go to an interview as well with the Vikings. To me, the Dolphins job is way better than the Vikings job. They're a better team. They are better players on defense. And I'm just looking at the stats now. So Chicago are fifth in yards allowed, 13th in defensive DVOA, 21st in points allowed, 22nd in EPA per play, but sixth overall. So yeah, they are he's an interesting candidate. And actually, you know, you talk about Jordan Poyer, you know, Desai likes to play three safeties a lot. He runs a 4-2-5, which, I mean, to be fair, most teams run a 4-2-5 these days. I mean, even Vic Fangio runs a 4-2-5. People talk about Fangio running a 3-4. Well, realistically, it's a 4-2-5, and it's what you do with those other players. You know, what he likes to do is put his two premier pass rushers on the same side at times. So you can imagine, you know, Chubb and Phillips on one side, or Ogba and Phillips on one side, or however you want to do it. He's a very interesting candidate. He's done a really good job in Seattle, done a lot of work with Tariq Woolen and Kobe Bryant, the two young corners there. He is, checks all the boxes, I think is the term.
Yeah, and those two corners, Kobe Bryant and Tariq Woolen, like those guys are, like it's the rebirth of the Legion of Boom. Like Tariq Woolen is as close to Richard Sherman as you're ever going to get. And Kobe Bryant, man, he's such a good player out of Cincinnati. And I was famous for my take last year that I thought that Kobe Bryant was probably better than Sauce Gardner. I was wrong. But Kobe Bryant's pretty good. He's a pretty good player. I wanted to draft him last year. He's going to be a nice player going forward. And that moves us to the last candidate. And this got me to thinking, like, who is Vic Fangio's candidate in that building? My guess, and I've been told this, that Stephen Ross, although he, you know, Stephen Ross may not know as much football as everybody else in the building does, but he's kind of an avid football fan. Do you think that's Stephen Ross running into the room with his checkbook saying, oh, we need a DC? I heard this Vic Fangio guy's really good. I'm ready to write a check. Do you think that's what that is about? Or do you think that is actually the top guy that McDaniel or Chris Greer want?
I mean, look, McDaniel really wanted him a year ago, so I can't think he doesn't want him, and there's got to be an element of thinking that he would bring in a sort of senior leadership, you know, the wise head in the room, perhaps some of the mistakes that we've had in terms of time management and
out. I always like that. I would love to have an old guy to just, you know, to tap McDaniel on the shoulder, like, don't call this time out here, you know, might be a good thing.
The interesting thing to me is that, you know, realistically, what's been happening with him is that he's been interviewing teams. You know, he's been out there interviewing for the Falcons defensive coordinator job. He's been out there interviewing for the, for, you know, that's with Arthur Smith, but he's been in Carolina interviewing for the defensive coordinator position, and they don't even have a head coach. You know, it sort of talks to the, talks to how well respected he is, you know. So I think they're very much in the Vic Fangio sweepstakes. I don't know where he ends up. I've seen people, Ian Rappaport, Jacino Anderson specifically, say that, you know, he is a target expected to receive significant consideration in Miami. But I don't think anybody's heard from Fangio, who is, you know, was reported to have been doing some consultancy work, but wasn't doing consultancy work. So it's not like you have to make a bid to the team for him to go, and he is, you bid to his agent, which is why we probably haven't heard anything about it. So yeah, but he's been down in Atlanta. He's been down in Carolina, and if he's interviewed in those two places, you know, I mean, I saw that last night. If Jonathan Gannon leaves Philadelphia, which he should do in the off season, the defensive coordinator with Philadelphia, he should become a head coach somewhere, potentially with the Texans. You know, the Eagles would look to take Fangio on as a defensive coordinator. So yes. I don't think you'll hear it quite as much as you would do if it was a guy that was on a team, for the reasons that I said, because you don't have to make an official approach, and therefore I think everything goes through Fangio's agent.
Yeah. Your choice, if it were up to you, who would you go the hardest after? Is it as simple as Vic Fangio has the reputation? You have a ready-made – you kind of have a ready-made defense. You just need a couple of draft picks and a guy here or there.
I think for the overall picture, I think Fangio, because, you know, he is the guru, because he brings that veteran quality to it. And I think potentially if you were to bring, I don't think Vic Fangio is going to get a head coaching job again. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think if you bring Fangio in, he's probably staying for three, four, he's staying for as long as he likes, really. Mm-hmm. The thing with Sean Desai is that, and you know, he's certainly not a booby prize. I think, you know, if you hire Sean Desai, I think it's a really good decision. He's a really good guy, but you potentially lose him in a year's time if the defense.
And remember, we talked about that. We talked about that on the pod and on OnlyFans before, that Stephen Ross was pretty, I would say, annoyed is the word, at getting the next hot guy and then leaving in a year.
Yeah.
You know, so I could easily see how Sean Desai comes in here. Our defense is top three, and then he's a head coach the following year somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then we're left doing this thing all over again.
I mean, the flip side is you get a third round pick. Doing it for that, but you know, you kind of just want to keep. I think there's a young nucleus on this team. When you look at Chubb, you look at Phillips, you look at Wilkins, you look at Sealer, you look at Brandon Jones, you look at Javon Holland, you look at Kohu. There's a young nucleus on this team, and to have them grow under the same defensive coordinator for 3, 4, 5 years, I think would be absolutely huge for them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. All right, on the way out, let's pick these games. It's Championship Sunday. It's my favorite Sunday of the year. That and wildcard weekend, the divisional round, you know, because the Dolphins haven't been in it since the year 2000, you know, I don't like it too much. But Championship Sunday, man, these are the four best teams. These are the four best teams in football. I think we ended up with the four best teams in football. Let's go out. Let's, you know, since the Dolphins are in the AFC, a lot of people have interest in that. Let's go with the NFC first. 49ers and Eagles, in my opinion, the two best rosters in football. Who do you got?
I think the Eagles win it. I think it's a really close game. I just, you know, and I do take with a little pinch of salt the result against the Giants. I do think it's very difficult for the Giants coming off that really emotional win the week before against Minnesota, but also playing the same team three times in a year is really difficult. And, you know, I just think that it was a bridge too far for them. And also the Eagles played a pretty much a perfect game, actually. I think the Eagles will probably win it. They're just strong everywhere you look. They've got the best offensive line in football. They've got a fantastic rotation on that defensive line. I mean, Jonathan Gannon played 10 players on that defensive line between 10 and 34 snaps. I mean, that's astonishing. An amazing secondary. You look at the two corners, Slay and Bradbury. They're all pro candidates. Gardner Johnson, the best at his position in the league. But then you throw in Kayvon Wallace and Reed Blankenship, who's played significant snaps as a rookie. Avion Maddox, you got Epps there. There's a lot of players on that back end. And then offensively, like I said, the best offensive line, three deep at running back, you know, Kenny Gainwell, Boston Scott, Miles Sanders. They're big at receiver, you know, with AJ Brown, a great tight end in Goddard, Devonta Smith, obviously. And then Jalen Hurts has been MVP type of candidate, and they've got a great coaching staff. I mean, both Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon will almost certainly be head coaches.
And the most ridiculous pass rush in ages.
Yeah, and a great kicker. You know, Jake Elliott's a great kicker. I think Philadelphia will win. I like the 49ers on offense and on defense. I think it'll be a great game. I think Philly might just have enough.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the upset, and not that I have great conviction in this. Everybody's been waiting for Brock Purdy to fuck up. He hasn't done it yet. I think we'll wait another week or another 2 weeks. The last time the Eagles were actually dominated in a game was against the Commanders. Okay, and I believe that game was at home. The Commanders just, you know, they smashed the ball at them. It was just 3 yards in a cloud of dust, but an effective 3 yards in a cloud of dust with a really good pass rush that neutralized the Eagles. I think the 49ers are a better version than the Commanders, okay? I think that's kind of obvious. I think they emulate that game plan, and they eke out an ugly one. I think the winning score might be 21 points. So I know you didn't give a score. I'll give one. 49ers 21, Eagles 19. Something like that.
28-24 something, Philadelphia.
All right. So we're on opposite ends there. I think we're going to be in opposite ends here again because you already tipped your hand. Bengals, Chiefs, Mahomes is not going to keep getting here and losing, okay? Because then he's going to start getting that reputation that Andy Reid had in Philadelphia. This has to be the Chiefs' year. Mahomes, I think, toughs it out. He's had a monster year. I think he continues it. And I think it's going to be a fabulous game, but Mahomes gets the ball last, and because he gets the ball last, he wins 34-31, Chiefs.
I think the Bengals win. I think they're the team of destiny, and they beat the team of destiny to be the team of destiny, so I think that they will win. I think that their quarterback is the best quarterback in the NFL currently, given the injury situation to Mahomes. The three deep at receiver, really good tight end, strong running game. If the offensive line can hold up against the Chiefs, I think Joe will be able to spread the ball around. That secondary is beatable. And I think Bengals 38, 31 Chiefs.
All right. And there you have it. Simon has Eagles, Bengals in the Super Bowl. I got the 49ers and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. So we're completely opposites. Okay. Maybe we're both wrong. I don't know how that's possible.
I don't know how that's possible either.
All right. We'll talk to you later on this week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.